You're listening to the Sagas in SaaS podcast. This episode features audio from a previously aired live video webcast.
To Sagas and SaaS Season 4, brought to you by Geek Saga Entertainment. I'm Tara, along with fellow hosts Nick and Jonathan.
This live webcast will cover Dust, Part 3 of Iron Gold, the fourth installment in Pierce Brown's Red Rising saga, and then it will be split into four podcast episodes, with each covering one of the four POV characters. If you're watching this as a webcast, there is a chance you will hear some spoilers for later books in the Red Rising series during our live webcast. However, if you are listening to this as a podcast, any spoilery bits have been edited out.
Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube at Sagas and SaaS, or email us at sagasandsaas@gmail.com to continue the conversation. Oh, and as always, the views expressed by the hosts are those of us as individuals and do not necessarily represent the show as a whole.
As if that changes very often. Last but not least, don't forget to check out our Patreon with 10 tiers ranging from $1 a month to $40 a month. It offers tons of ways to support us and receive some great perks in return, including early access to the podcast versions of these episodes, as well as timed patron-only access to these live videos, which will only be available to our patrons for the month after they've finished airing. You can find us at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment. Now, We made a brief mention of Lyria, but how did she end up at Holiday's side to question Ephraim? Well, we're about to find out.
So remember when we mentioned that Lyria was kind of caught spying on Ephraim, handed Pax and Electra over to the Duke, and had a bunch of obsidian sent chasing after her? Well, she dived into a ventilation duct, did not have to escape a trash compactor, and made her way onto the streets of the reconstruction zone far below. And she's, well, not feeling too great about herself, because all she can do is think about the fact that Kevex was killed, worry that they'll kill the children too, and believe that she is poisoned, and that she was stupid to trust a Gray. She does have Philip's pistol, but she also has no idea where she is, and when she tries to ask directions from some vagrants, they attack her. Thankfully, the pistol comes in handy, and Lyria is able to get away, but the obsidians are still on her trail. So if she finally decides to climb a very, very long stairwell up to the more populated part of the city, Lyria knows that she should try to run, try to disappear. She also knows that if she does, she's no better than Philip. And she's also worried about what might happen to her nephew Leon. So she does the brave thing, the right thing, and turns herself into some watchmen.
Once in custody, Lyria languishes for a while until Holiday shows up to transport her to the Citadel. Along the way, though, Victra pays a visit. Clad in fucking pregnancy armor and ready to fuck shit up because damn right she wants her daughter back. For a minute, it seems as if Victra will in fact get her hands on Lyria, but then their transport is surrounded by Augustus vessels and dozens of armored people. And at their head, a huge woman in pale blue fox armor. Niobe Au Telamonis has come to war, y'all! Lyria is escorted to a room deep within the Citadel, where Niobe, Daxo, and Theodora are waiting to question her. Of course, she immediately tries to offer up any and all information she has, but they're not about to just believe her and even accuse her of being a society plant, possibly without her even knowing that she is one. Despite Lyria's attempts to tell them what she knows, they are about to use oracles on her when Mustang finally busts in. And y'all, she is pissed. Not only did she not authorize them to torture Lyria, but she had previously ordered that Octavia's nasty little oracles be destroyed. So the fact that Theodora saved some anyway is, well, not a good look, you know? Mustang straight up kicks everyone but Holiday out of the room because it's time she has a one-on-one chat with Lyria. And even though Lyria has really wanted to hate on the Sovereign, Mustang obviously wins her over because she's, well, her lovely self, even in this time of crisis. Unfortunately, the security footage from the times Lyria was out in public with Philippe is useless. But hey, remember that gun of his that Lyria absconded with? Once they recover it from the watchman who tried to pocket it to sell, they run forensics on it and bam! Turns out Ephraim messed up because he used a gun legally registered to his actual name. And, well, obviously Holiday knows exactly who he is.
As we already know from Ephraim's chapters, Lyria's intel helped them track him down. And she was part of the meeting between Holiday and Ephraim that led to our resident sad boy agreeing to at least try to help them get the kiddos back. After the rescue mission, which we of course know was attempted, but maybe probably not actually completed, she believes that he, Pax, and Electra are alive and safe. She's even invited to meet with the Sovereign again. And this time Mustang literally gets down on her knees and apologizes to Lyria for the loss of her family, for the Republic breaking the trust that they had placed in them. And at this point, Lyria will obviously do any and everything Mustang asks. So when she is asked to stand witness before the Senate, Lyria immediately agrees. Well, almost immediately. First, she wants to make sure that Liam will be looked after and that they will give him his eyesight because she can't afford it herself. But they agree. And needless to say, Lyria is feeling pretty dang great about things when she finally gets to take a shower, watch the nastiness of the past of however many hours or maybe even days it's been from her skin. Only when she's done and steps out of the shower, she is greeted with a giant hypodermic needle of something that knocks her the fuck out. And the last thing she hears before she loses consciousness is, House Barker sends their regards. Dun, dun, dun!
Yay, Lyria, making it out of the Duke's place, though. Not that she was immediately in the clear, but the fact that she dove into a ventilation shaft and was somehow able to get out anyway is great. And as we said, when she dared to approach a vagrant camp and ask some Reds, you know, like, hey, they're my color, maybe they'll help me for directions, they attack her instead. Ugh.
She escapes them too and begins climbing stairs of an old tramway, a long, hard climb, but she's thinking, it's anger keeps my ass moving. Anger at Philip for using me, at the men who thought I was their prey, at myself for trusting anyone on this bloody damn moon.
She knows that she could try to run or disappear, but she would never see Liam again. And even though the Sovereign didn't protect Lyria's family, Lyria's all, I'm not like her. So she turns herself in, which, listen, this is kind of one of those times where, Nick, I know earlier when we were talking about Lysander, you said, like, I don't really feel like Lyria is as childish. And in a way, it's Lyria's taking all the blame of everything that has happened and placing it on one person who is probably the smallest part of the problem. Mustang has been doing and trying to do everything she can. And it's the politics, policies as a whole that are the issue. But Lyria is very focused in her blame, which I think is why a lot of readers don't like her, because they see her, they can't see beyond her just blaming Mustang, which is like understandable, but we all love Mustang so much that we're like, Mustang isn't like that. But anyway, so Lyria is like, I'm not like the Sovereign. I'm going to protect people. I'm going to turn myself in. And man, Holiday shows up to shuttle Lyria to the Citadel. But then like everything that happens is only like a couple pages. It's like a 2 pages at most, maybe 2.5. And this is a really great sequence because I love how Victra, picture pregnancy armor, please, because I kind of like can't get it into my head what pregnancy armor would look like. But Victra is straight up 7 months pregnant in her pregnancy armor and shows up to just kick some ass and collect Lyria. And this whole sequence is just badass bitches. Victra is a badass bitch. Maybe she's not necessarily, she's doing the wrong thing for the right reasons, I think, in this case. Like, all she wants is to get her daughter back, but this isn't the way to do it. But badass bitch showing up and 7 months pregnant, showing up in her pregnancy armor. And it's only because Niobe Atalamanis comes to war that they're able to shake Victra off and make it to their destination. Just, I love everything about this because, listen, there's no men doing the rescuing here, okay? Holiday's the one transporting Lyria. Lyria is the one who has the information and is giving herself up to try to save these kids that she didn't know she was putting in danger in the first place. Victra is a mom coming to kick some fucking ass. And Niobe is a wife also coming to kick some ass because she's like, no, I want this girl for myself. I want her alive. I want to know why this happened. She's supposed to be part of our household. I just love it all. particularly how the chapter ends with Niobe Telemachus has come to war. Chef's kiss. Thank you, Pierce, for giving us this entire sequence. Now, even with Victor being held off, Lyria is not having a good time.
First, Theodora and Daxo are playing good cop, bad cop with her. Well, at least until Theodora starts being the actual bad cop and insisting that Lyria must have been recruited by the society, maybe she doesn't even know what's happened. And apparently, oracles are still a thing, and they're about to use one on her, but then Mustang just bursts into the room, and she is mad because she did not give them permission to torture Lyria. And also, they were supposed to get rid of all the oracles, so what the fuck? Really, though, Daxo telling her there was no need for Mustang to see the torture, that's why she has them, not a great excuse, and definitely not a good look.
No, and Mustang's reply is perfect, of course. She says, because I'm such a frail flower that I need bold souls to do my torturing for me. Apparently, as we said, she told Theodora to kill all the oracles, which good for her, and at Theodora for preserving some of them anyway, despite her, like, I was doing it to protect your family reasoning, which is honestly questionable. But then Mustang makes all of them leave so she can talk to Lyria alone, saying, I tire of being treated like a child by my own council because I have chosen to obey the laws. You are no different from Victra. You mistake morality for naivete.
Once they're alone, Lyria can't help but admire Mustang. I mean, really, who wouldn't? She watches her, thinking, the Sovereign is dressed simply, her hair held back from her head in a ponytail. Unlike most golds you see on the street, she doesn't wear jewelry. Only a gold lion ring on her left middle finger for her House Augustus, and an iron ring of a howling wolf on her right. She's younger than I thought she was when I first saw her, but her youth doesn't make her look vulnerable. It makes her look alive. Powerful. No wonder a boy from the mines fell in love with her. I used to think it a betrayal. He should have stuck with his own, but how could he resist a woman like this?
Okay, so first of all, just Mustang love. There is so much Mustang love in these chapters. Like, despite Lyria wanting to hate Mustang, I feel like Lyria is a little bit falling in love with Mustang.
That's one of the things I actually really love about Lyria's POV is I can completely understand where she's coming from with her anger and her just fuck you attitude towards particularly people like Mustang who said, oh, we're going to fix everything. We're going to, you know, make things better for you. We're going to get you out of the mines. And really, it was just putting them from one shit situation into a different shit situation. And the way that morphs over this book in her chapters, I think, at least for me, felt very realistic of like, this is who I perceive this person as versus now I'm meeting them and I'm really understanding them all the way to the point of when Mustang, and I know we'll get to this in a minute, when Mustang kneels in front of her and asks for her forgiveness and Lyria's like, well, shit, I'll do whatever you want. Like, yeah, that's how you win people over.
Yeah, and I think that this is where we see Lyria growing and developing so much more as a person than Lysander, which is why Lysander, yeah, I believe, is so frustrating, whereas Lyria becomes more and more understandable, or maybe not more and more understandable, but where it's so much easier to understand where Lyria is coming from and where she goes because she realizes she's wrong. Mm-hmm. And she takes a step back and says, okay, yeah, I was wrong about the Sovereign. And when she's trying to talk to Mustang, no one seems to understand why Lyria gave herself up. And she's like, oh, it was the right thing to do. And Mustang is like, not good enough. She's right, though. It's true, but it's not the real deep-seated reason. And Mustang, being Mustang, is reading her and knows that that's not really the reason. But Mustang does believe her, only believes her, when Lyria finally mentions her nephew and explains, if I ran, Liam would grow up without a family, thinking I was a terrorist, and he'd feel small the rest of his life. He'd think the evil's in his blood, that he deserves shame, and he'd believe what they say about us, about Reds, that one of us was worth more than the rest of us combined, about Gamma, that we're greedy in the blood. I'd sooner rip my eyes out than let him feel that. I promised my sister I would protect him, and I will. Liam will be proud of who he is, who his family was, and the gamma blood that runs in his veins. So throw me in deep grave. Kill me. My life doesn't mean shit. Your son's life does. That girl's life does. And if I can help save them, then Liam can hold his head up high. And so can I.
That's a great passage.
But despite believing Lyria, she unfortunately doesn't seem to have much useful information to give. She knows the places she visited with Philip, the dates and times, but the feeds are messed up. And all she remembers about who Ephraim gave the children to is that the man was a pink with a sort of squid or octopus-topped cane. But then Lyria finally thinks to mention Philip's gun, which apparently one of the watchmen who took her in tried to pocket, for lack of a better term. But once they got hold of it and ran it through information, Holiday realizes who Philip is, her brother-in-law Ephraim, of course. As we know, Lyria goes with Holiday to corner Ephraim, though oof at her assuming he and the kids are safe. She is also relieved that Ephraim is alive, which surprises her. She doesn't believe she's the forgiving type, though. She does feel pity for Ephraim and his pain, which is interesting considering how mad she always got when she thought others pitied her and her pain. Either way, she can't hate him any more than she can hate herself, which maybe isn't forgiveness, but it's something, right? Also, though, she knows, just because he has pain doesn't mean he should bring others into it. That's on him.
Truth, Lyria, truth. And so we go back to how much therapy would probably be good in this society, republic, whatever you want to call it now. I mean, really, like, she tries to give them all the information she has, and it's really not much, but the fact that they're able to track Ephraim down because she stole his gun, I know it's a given that they're going to be able to track Ephraim down through her, right? Otherwise, why have her turn herself in? Why have her go through all of this? Why have her admit all of this? She's with Holiday after she thinks that Ephraim and the children are safe, right? Which... last we knew, they'd blown themselves out of the skies. Leary is not being given information, or she's just assuming, who knows. But she's talking to Holiday, and we finally learn more about why Ephraim is the way he is, because it isn't just about Trigg, which there was always like these little bits and pieces where there was definitely other stuff going on with him, right? But this is the big reveal that, of course, we know he joined the Sons of Ares after Trigg died. And it turns out that he was a recruiter who brought people like Lyria to fight for the Rising, taught them how to fight and how to survive. And later he was a scar hunter, meaning he was sent after golds, peerless guards. And at one point he was sent on a mission that turned out to be a trap. And his men were interrogated and skinned alive right in front of him. And he was absolutely made to watch. They caught the gold who did it red-handed. Literally peeling, knife in hand. But that gold had information that the sovereign Mustang needed, and he exchanged this information for a pardon. So Ephraim is a big fucking mess. We knew that he had been through some rough shit, but the details of this are actually, when I read this, I remember thinking this was beyond what I expected, honestly, that he literally watched his friends, the people that he had recruited, he had brought into this, get peeled alive right in front of him. Oh, that's why Holiday took Bolga, because she knew Ephraim couldn't stand to watch another friend die. Hearing all of this obviously does not endear Holiday to Lyria, but then what else are they to do? Holiday is also a product of her life, after all. I don't know. There's so much to unpack here. Even though these are Lyria's chapters, this isn't so much about Lyria as it is about finding out why Ephraim, like how he ended up in this sort of deep, dark place. And also how Holiday is able to, I mean, I know Volga obviously helped kidnap the kids, but I don't know. There's a lot here. I hate that Volga is captured, and Volga doesn't deserve this. And I know that she like did bad things. Like, listen, she shot Kavix, y'all. Like, I know, yeah. I know we're all gonna be like, oh my God, she shot Kavix and also helped kidnap kids. But like, I also feel like she was somebody who was led on by her deep-seated loyalty in Ephraim, because he saved her. And a lot of people make really bad mistakes when they are going along with the things somebody who helped them is asking them to do. I don't know. God damn it, Pierce, why do you do this to me?
Anyway, Lyria gets to meet with Mustang one more time, and Mustang praises Lyria, well, in a way, for owning her own mistakes, and then says she must own her own mistakes as well. Y'all, Mustang just kneels down in front of Lyria and her council and asks for her forgiveness, not just because Lyria lost her family, which we've already seen Lyria doesn't always react kindly to because she sees it as pity, but she understands that the real crime that has been done is that the Republic and Mustang as the sovereign herself failed Lyria by breaking the trust that was supposed to be put in both the Republic and in Mustang herself. And obviously this was the right move in just like all the ways, because Lyria realizes, I can't hold on to the anger or the pettiness or the pain. I want only to help her, to protect families like mine. Letting go of that anger doesn't spit in the memory of Ava or Tyrion or the children. It honors them. And for the first time that I can remember, I feel hope.
Lyria agrees to help by standing witness before the Senate, but doesn't seem like that's actually going to happen anytime soon, if ever. Because last we see of her, she's been stabbed with a giant needle as she exits the shower. And the last thing she hears is the brown woman who has drugged her saying, "Hello, traitor. House Barca sends their regards."
Listen, I know that that quote was in the summary, but I also needed to put it here because yes. Great Ace Wolf reference, okay?
But in the Song of Ice and Fire, I truly believe Jaime meant it in a nice manner and Roose Bolton misinterpreted Jaime's actual request.
I mean, Roose Bolton was absolutely an asshole, but...
And that gold, by the way, is a Bolton. Gold who was skinning people.
Yes, that gold is definitely a Bolton.
I thought you were referring to Victra, and I was like, no. Victra might not be great, but Victra isn't going to go around skinning people alive, I don't think.
I mean, she might if it got her kid back, but...
Yeah, true. Oh, Lyria, she tried so hard, and she's still getting screwed in the end here.
That was very frustrating. Pierce, yeah. I do not like that choice.
I imagine it's all going somewhere else. But at this point, it just feels like, oh, God, she's just trying so hard to do the right thing. When she only messed up by mistake in the first place, let's be real. Despite Lyria's very obvious negative thoughts toward the Republic and the Sovereign because of everything that happened to her family, she does really love the Telemannises. She would never, ever have done anything to harm them. And by helping... inadvertently get Pax kidnapped, she did harm them. Well, and also then Kavix gets shot, which, because Lyria does ask, what about Kavix? Is he alive? And Niobe's like, don't even talk about my husband. And I'm just like, but please, can you please tell us if Kavix is alive?
She says something like, he still might die. The implication that I got was he's currently alive,
yeah,
but he is not in good shape and he might die. Which, kind of like where we left Cassius before he died off screen. But honestly, the prognosis seemed a little bit more positive for Kavix.
I think it did. And also at the same time, like I get Naomi being just like, nah, I'm not telling you after what you did. I ain't telling you shit. But also we as the readers want to know, damn it.
Let Kavix live. Let him retire and have a good life and be a good guy because he deserves it.
Just let Sophocles be curled up in his lap watching Hollows forever. I don't care. He would hate that, though. Again, Kavix is hero of the ages. He would hate just sitting in an armchair with Sophocles in his lap.
But I just want him and Sophocles to be okay.
Well, Sophocles is fine because Volga got a hold of him and threw him into the goodness. Cockpit. Thank God for Volga, okay?
Yeah, because Dano was going to fucking kill him. And I was I will reach through this audiobook and kill you, Dano.
No, Sophocles is fine. And let's just assume Kavix is going to be as well, considering. As we close out the episode, we just want to give a shout out to our heroes, to your patron, Tommy of the TKOK Podcast Network. Thank you so much for supporting us. Once again, I'm Tara, along with Nick and Jonathan. Don't forget that you can always hit us up at Sagas and Sass on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, or email us at sagsandsass@gmail.com with any comments or thoughts you might have.
Keep an eye out for our next episode, which will cover our final POV from Iron Gold, Darrow.
Thank you for listening to the Sagas and Sass podcast. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter at Sagas and Sass.